Welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast, a place where we put our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world today so we can better pray for and equip the next generation. Our focus will always be revival and spiritual awakening in our children, our schools, and our motherhood. We're so glad you're here with us. Let's get started. Hey friends, I'm Leanne Heiss, your host, and I am so excited about today's episode. I can't wait for you to meet Scott Schimmel. He is the president and chief guide of the U School. U School's mission is to help people find their identity, purpose, and place of belonging. And today was a vital conversation for me as a mom, and I know you are going to not want to miss a single minute of today's episode. He talks so much about helping our kids find their place in the world. Well, Scott, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited that you joined us.
Thank you. It's fun to be back in the Moms in Prayer world. It's been a while for me.
I think it's so fun. As they told me, you've got to talk to Scott about this issue of fatherhood and how it relates to parenting your kids. I was excited to hear that your wife, Carrie, is a Moms in Prayer mom. So we can just start right there. Why don't you tell us about your family?
Yeah, my wife and I have been married for almost 15 years, coming up on our 15-year anniversary. We had kids pretty young, and our son just turned 12, and we can see the tiny signs of teenager entering into our home. Our younger two girls literally ducking and covering when he gets emotional. That's our cue right now. just hide. And then we have a 9-year-old daughter and a daughter who is going to be 5 in a few days. So basically 5, 9, and 12. And so it's a busy house.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. So much transition too as you enter these preteen, teen years.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like my wife the other day, she sent me a text about my son, some issue of him being mopey or sad. And she said, "What do you think I should do?" And I wrote back, "I don't know." And she's like, "You literally teach this." You literally lead workshops and you can't help us figure out our own son. So those who can't teach, I guess, is that how that phrase goes?
I don't know, but I was in youth ministry before I started doing women's ministry. And I thought I knew a lot about parenting, and all bets are off when it's your kid.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Why didn't they tell us that boys could be as emotional as girls?
That's a great question. I have this like special heart for boys right now. I think there's, and I don't want to get in trouble or say anything inappropriate, but I don't worry about my daughters right now. For example, the Disney Channel is on in the morning at our house every morning. And I just have noticed there's these revolving set of commercials that are about empowering girls. And I, as a dad of two girls, I love it. So things like "Be Strong, Princess," I think is their tagline or something like that.
Yep.
You know what? There's not been a commercial yet for, "Hey boys, be strong, be empathetic, be courageous," whatever it is. So I've just noticed this trend to, and rightly so, support young girls and help them grow up to be strong. But I'm just a little bit more concerned about boys right now, even how school's designed for boys, or not designed for boys actually. So that's a great point. That brings up, I think, a bigger conversation.
Oh, I'm ready to have that conversation with you are, because my oldest is a boy. He's in high school. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking the same thing. How can we raise a young man to be a boy? You know, it's parenting at a totally different level. So talk to me about your wife and your Moms in Prayer story, because I love this, Scott, but you have your own Moms in Prayer story.
Yeah.
So tell us how those two things relate.
So we go so far back that it used to be called Moms in Touch. And it's probably 7 or 8 years ago. We live in San Diego. We live a few miles away from the headquarters of Moms in Prayer. There's a handful of friends that I had on the board at that point. And I must have been around 30 years old. And I think I was chosen or invited as a very token young guy who's doing youth ministry and got a finger on the pulse. I had little kids at that point. And so I was asked to consider joining the board. And that's how my wife got involved. Because I think at the time our son was only 2 or 3 years old. We weren't even in school really. And if there was school, it was a Christian preschool. So we weren't exactly worried about the state of his soul at that point. My wife got involved when our son went to kindergarten, and we lived maybe a block and a half from our local public elementary school. And there had been a group on and off for Moms in Prayer over the years. And so she rallied and helped a few women start meeting. And I can't speak to this, but I'd hear after the Moms in Prayer meetings, her coming home, and she was bringing a baby to those meetings at that point during that year. And I was, you know, I'd ask, how was it? And she, you know, she would say, well, I think I prayed for like a 30 seconds. Then the rest of the hour, I'm chasing this baby around and this toddler around. So she's not currently running the group or leading the group. And it's in those transitions that you mentioned that I think it's time, as she was talking about recently, time to get back into that for this next year, especially as our son goes into middle school. It's now for sure time to pray.
Yeah, it's on.
Yeah.
Parenting is on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's such a good example too, as our Moms in Prayer listeners are listening, that every Moms in Prayer group takes on a different texture based on the moms that are in it. And
yeah,
sometimes our very best effort in the middle of that is 30 seconds of prayer while you rock babies, you know,
right.
The Lord's our heart, and that's fundamental as we build this. So tell me about your time on the board. Is it a secret time? Do I have to?
No. Yeah, it was. I won't share the trade secrets back in the day, but I was an interesting part of the board. I was there for 3 years during the transition from the name Moms in Touch to Moms in Prayer. And part of that, I think, and this is my interpretation, I think that was really a critical season for Moms in Prayer to start thinking about the next generation. And I felt very privileged to know that there were, I mean, so many people that were a part of and still are part of Moms in Prayer. It's, you know, felt very humbling to be a part of that.
I'm so excited to have that conversation with you because I did not know Moms in Touch. I only know Moms in Prayer. I am so grateful with the wisdom and skill with which our board helped navigate that transition and level us and aim us where we're headed in the future.
It's a much better positioned brand name. We could talk about that, but it's like now it really makes sense. It's Moms in Prayer. That's it.
We stand on the shoulders of Fern and the ones who built this ministry up to be what it is. So we have this powerful legacy of prayer, and now we just are really platformed to see it become an even greater, have a greater reach in the global community. So that's so fun. But that's not what you do full time. Okay, so I'm so excited for everybody to learn about U School, but tell us about your ministry and what you do now.
Yeah, so the U School is a business. We are people of faith, but we don't have a Christian, it's a secular company. It's just a company. And that could be a whole nother, podcast interview. But what we do is help people think through their identity and their purpose and issues of belonging in their lives, particularly as they go through transitions in life. For example, middle school to high school is a big transition. High school to post-high school, whether that's college or university or career, and then college to career. And we've gotten into working with veteran transition as well as helping athletes transition to life outside of sport. So our approach is let's create an environment and a process for people to think about the right things in their lives, to think about who they are and the story of where they come from and who they want to be, and then equip them to have really meaningful conversations with people that matter the most to them. Their team of what we call advisors, people that are surrounding them, close friends, sometimes family, sometimes mentor types, but it's to really tee up meaningful, deep conversations about the things that matter the most. And ironically, what we do is very simple. We just ask questions and have conversations, but it's really powerful. And we found we've been so privileged to see tremendous life impact happening through this very simple process that we run.
I think it's interesting that your work really focuses on asking questions instead of telling people what to think when they're in the middle of transition.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that's the predominantly, especially working with students, that's a big part of the approach that is out there. And we spend a lot of time trying to learn why are kids graduating from high school and college, whether they're people of kids of faith in a ministry, very formed ministry, which is my background, or just students in general. But there's been this collective wisdom theory that if you are in high school and you don't, quote, know yourself or know what to do with your life, especially from a professional standpoint, don't worry about it. Just go off to get a degree, go off to a college. And in that environment, you will for sure stumble upon who you are and what matters to you and how to live your life. But what happens when you're graduating from college and you had to pick a major at some point? If you interview 10 college students, six of them will say, well, you know, I just kind of picked this because I had the most units in here. And it comes a little bit easier to me. I don't know if this is my thing. I don't know if this is what I want to do. And then the collective wisdom would come back at that point and say, well, don't worry about it. You're still really young. You don't need to figure yourself out yet, but you should go get a job. And then that job, that's where you'll, and then, you know, my research and my path to starting this thing called the U School was to track down hundreds of students that were very involved in college ministry, which I worked at through University Christian Fellowship, National College Ministry, to track down hundreds of people in their late 20s, early 30s, who had really good degrees from colleges and universities, who had been a part of ministry, been trained as leaders, seen friends come to faith, grown in faith themselves. And I heard them, almost all of them, like 98% of them say, you know what? I don't really think I'm close to God anymore. I don't really have a close group of friends. I'm pretty lonely. And I really don't like what I do for a living. I'm not excited about my job. I don't like where it's headed. And I don't really know what to do next. But the older that they got, the more I'd hear them say something to the effect of, I guess that's just the way it is. And when you're hitting that stage, you might be married. You might start having kids. And at some point, there's the exploration of who you are and what to do with your life. You got to sort of give it up. I think that's what people would say. And just kind of make the best of this and hope that someone is just, or something's going to happen to you, a lightning bolt from the sky that zaps you and says, here's how you live. And so what we're really trying to do is be a solution to that. And a part of what we say is, it's ironic that you can go to school from kindergarten through graduating college, which is like 17 years, and not take not only one course, but one class on how to understand yourself and how to really frame a life and imagine a life that's worth living. So that's what we're trying to provide, is the space for that at the right times, which is in middle school, high school, and early college.
So what underlying questions are there in students' minds as they enter? I love that you made those three transitions, middle school, high school, college. Mm-hmm. What do we need to ask them?
One of the dynamics that I've watched is particularly in, a college setting, when especially a junior or senior recognizes and feels the anxiety that I have to figure this out pretty soon, at least the career stuff. I need to figure out where I'm going to work. What I've seen happen is that student who's a junior or senior has this bright idea. I should go to career services. I'm literally paying for them to help me do that. And they're walking into a career services meeting, an appointment, without articulating what their true questions are. And so that's where we're trying to come in to say, let us give you the questions. Because when a student walks into career services, the career services person hears the question, I need to find a job. Can you help me find it? And if that's the question, then it turns into, well, here's a resume. Here's how you get on LinkedIn. Here's how you interview and you need to get an internship. And so they'll give you the tools to get a job. But those aren't really the questions. The questions are more, if they're unformed, there's something to the effect of, what should I do with my life? and I love the ugly duckling story. This doesn't fit. I don't really understand who I am. Can you help me figure out who I am? We've learned over the years that there are five key questions that people are asking, and we're giving them those questions and say, these are the questions of life. So number one, what do you believe in? Number two, what kind of person are you going to be? Three, what's your mission? Four, how are you going to contribute? And five, who do you belong to? And those are identity, purpose, belonging questions that are the right questions. We talk about altitude, like pulling people up when they're in transition. Most people want to go down when they're in transition and try to figure out, okay, what do? What college should I pick? What major should I get? What job should I apply for? And they get on job boards or websites that teach them how to find a school and start applying to schools. That's going down, which is more confusing, typically very overwhelming, and doesn't actually help you get to clarity. So we want to pull people up and say, these are really the questions. And if you solve these questions, if you really figure out what you believe in, what matters to you, and what your place in the world is, it's going to be a lot clearer about things like career or where I'm supposed to live. If you get clear about the kind of person that you want to be, not career-wise, but quality-wise, characteristics. I want to be a person of courage or kindness, generosity, speaking truth to power, whatever that is for you. Chances are you'll have a clear imagination for that. And you'll be able to say no to things that don't fit you. We don't talk actually at all about purpose. Purpose is a very lofty existential. There's 10,000 books on it, thousands of websites on it. Right. We talk about mission, which I've learned a lot from work with veterans. Mission is time bound. It's the next 6 months or 6 years. It has to do with a problem that I want to solve, that I have to solve. It's over there. It's specific. If you get clear about your mission, I think even looking at my wife, she wouldn't say there's one overarching purpose. There's seasons of mission. There's seasons of things to focus on. So we just found that to be a much more helpful conversation.
That's so good.
If you figure out who you belong to and who's in your corner, who's got your back, and who, even if you make the biggest mistake, is still going to love you. I think our commitment, our core belief is you can figure that out even at 13 years old. You might not have it all solved, but if you can answer those questions at 13, your transition to high school is just going to be infinitely easier.
So there must be times when you come up against parents who are asking these questions, but then want to project something onto their kid's situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me about
absolutely,
that.
Yeah. One of the tagline that we use, particularly with students, is we talk a lot about story. Your life is telling a story. And the tagline is, don't let anybody else write your story. What we hear is sometimes, I'd say it's about half of the kids we work with, half the students. If you ask them, do your parents, have they told you what they want you to do with your life? But half of them would say, yeah, it's pretty clear. They've told me, they sat me down and said, you're good at math, so you should go into engineering. Or in our family, we're a bunch of lawyers. Or, you know, your mom, your dad, everyone's in education. So, you know, that's probably where you're going to go. The other half would say their parents had given them clear expectations, but they've been very unhelpful because the other half of parents have said, we just want you to be happy. We don't care what you do. We just want you to be happy. And I think that's actually more unhelpful. And it's all me. I mean, I've said it too. It comes out of my mouth. I just want my kids to be happy. It's actually really unhelpful if you listen to kids because, and this is my theory, because kids understand the pressure that they have to figure their lives out. That's a given. But now their parents are saying, you don't just need to figure your life out and figure out how to make a living. We also need you and expect you to become happy, which we're not going to demonstrate what that looks like for you because most parents are happy. And we're not going to define what that means. But if, you know, it's not just that you had a good paying job, but if you don't like it, we're going to be disappointed. Yeah, there's parents that very unintentionally typically put on expectations to their kids, which is all good intention, but it's just unhelpful. And so that's, that leads to another conversation. How can parents be helpful, more helpful? How can they get out of the way a little bit? I'm finding myself do that as well.
What are you doing with your transitioning middle school boy right now? Mm-hmm. What kinds of questions are you asking him at age-appropriate levels right now?
For him, especially when a kid is entering into a school. So for him, he'll be in sixth grade, which is the freshman year of middle school, or freshman in high school, or freshman in college. What's most top of mind is not school. It's not academics. It's not what after-school programs am I going to join? It's not sports, it's belonging. It's who are my friends going to be? And that's where we see those last few days of elementary school, we're seeing him express sadness and fear and anxiety. And I think it's because he has a pretty good group of friends at school. And some of his friends aren't going to that middle school. I'm sure he has already seen some of the buddies he's been hanging out with kind of turn into little jerks, which is middle school.
Right.
I'm guessing as we have conversations with him, that's the core part of his anxiety. It's not, how do I get from one class period to the next class period? It's not, oh my gosh, do I have to wear a uniform for PE? Those are probably the parent anxieties. But I think for him, it's who am I going to sit on the first day of school at lunch with? Where am I going to stand and loiter at which locker? Who's that going to be with? The questions we're asking him are to think through who are the kids that he's really drawn to right now. And we don't have any question of, at least for him, that he chooses kids of character. He always does. But we're trying to help him think about that, trying to help him examine where his friends' hearts are and where they're headed. And one of the phrases that we've baked into his head, and our daughters too, at least the older daughter, has been this idea that hurt people hurt people. And that's like fundamental therapy stuff. I've heard him use that phrase when he has been kicked by a kid or when a kid's been rude to him. Or I'll ask him, why do you think that is at some point? Not just how do you handle that, but why do you think that kid's acting that way? And I've heard him say, well, daddy, you know, hurt people. So I don't know how he's hurt or who hurt him. Maybe it's his parents. Maybe it's his brother. Maybe it's someone else at school. But he gets why the kid's acting that way. And so I don't know what that's going to turn into for him. I pray that it's compassion, it's empathy, and high boundaries too, to stay away from that sort of behavior. But so to answer your question, it's all for us about his friendships. And I think most parents would know if your kid has a good group of friends or good one friend, at least, it almost is like the world settles inside the house. But if a kid's alone or lonely or isolated, things don't go well. It's a cascading effect on school and academics and self-esteem and mood and all that stuff. So that's what we're hoping for. I mean, he doesn't really have the clear answer right now who his buddy's going to be. And this is what I always hope for myself and pray for my kids, is at least there's one kid that, you know, it's just like, we're always going to sit together. We're always going to hang out after school together. It's a guaranteed. We're for each other. We support each other. So that's what we're really hoping for. And that's, I think that's where our anxiety is, and for sure his anxiety is.
Is there anything that you'd say to parents who know that their kid is becoming isolated, or they haven't found that group of kids, mm-hmm. and who are really in the middle of grieving that alongside mm-hmm. their children? What if they don't have a place to belong right now?
Yeah, that's so hard. And I think thank God for Moms in Prayer, because that's a prayer thing.
Yeah.
Because at this age, it's, you know, they're in middle school, high school, they're not in preschool anymore where you can organize play dates necessarily. Although I don't think that's necessarily, depends.
I don't know if I'm beyond that, actually.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There can be, and maybe we can get into this a little bit later. I think parents often can do more to organize relationships than they think they can. So one, I think it's, you're right to grieve that. That's hard and that's sad. And that brings up anxiety. And I also pray into that. In some ways, think of the words of Jesus, this kind can only come out by prayer and fasting. Like this, yeah. This thing, it's, you're not on campus, you're not in class.
Right.
What if your kid's just awkward, socially awkward? And then it's like, what do you do? I think it's walk alongside and help your kid process that. And what we do when we work with kids, particularly one-on-one in youth school, is one, we'll help them process that and identify what they actually want, what they're actually looking for. And then sometimes get pretty practical. Like, hey, have you thought about wearing deodorant? You know, or so no one calls you to hang out. No one texts you to hang out, right? Have you thought about texting them? Well, I don't know what I would say. Well, sometimes it's very tactical. Is there a movie that you want to see? Right. Is there someone that you'd want to invite? Like, do you know how to even ask that question over text so you don't sound like a dork? Can I help you write that? So sometimes we get pretty tactical, and I understand the parent-kid relationship dynamic. Sometimes a parent doesn't have access for that.
Yep.
And that might lead us into another conversation. How do you get your kid to have those conversations with perhaps other adults? Because I think that's critical.
I think that is exactly my next conversation with you, mm-hmm. or question for you is, you talk about helping our kids find an advisory board. Why is that important? And how do we invite them to set that up or encourage that?
So part of raising healthy adults, which is what we talk about in youth school, in the church world, we'd probably say a mature disciple. And I think they're actually interchangeable in my mind. One, we have to get clear about what that means. What is a healthy adult? What is a mature disciple? And it's not what do they know, but it's a part of that. But it's a lot more than that. It's what are they like? What does a healthy adult say? What do they think about? What are they able to do? A critical part of that is, if you're trying to raise healthy adults, the math, I don't think it's a direct correlation, to use some math language, but it's pretty close. Where if you're trying to raise a healthy adult and you don't have healthy adults around modeling and demonstrating it, it's probably not going to happen. It's going to be a hard road. You were in youth ministry. This is kind of an old youth ministry ratio, but it's a 5-to-1. And it used to be, the youth ministry ratio is, you need to have one adult for every car of kids. You need to have one adult that drives them to paintball or pizza or the beach. The best research I've read is actually a flip. You need to have 5 adults, healthy adults, who are interacting per kid. And what if it's wrong? What if it's 6, or what if it's 4, or what if it's 3? It still becomes a problem to solve. And so what we've been doing is trying to help structure and create a system where kids actually have those relationships and conversations. And it's not just a kid knows a healthy adult, but it's a kid has a conversation, interaction with that healthy adult over time. And so for me personally, there's a big epiphany a couple of years ago. I was speaking at a parent event and a dad came up to me and he asked something to the effect of, I have 2 boys. I think they're 13 and 15. And what you're saying about these advisors I really am struck by that. However, my boys don't have anybody that they know. They don't talk to their teachers. They're not in sports with coaches. And we don't have family around. So what do we do? And out of my mouth came something that actually was speaking to me. I said, well, you have friends, right? And he's like, yeah, I have a few friends. how have you organized time spent between your boys and those friends? And as I'm saying that, I'm like, holy cow. And I'm driving home that day and I realize my son at that point is 10. And I realized that my son's going to be a teenager in 4 or 5 years. And from what I understand, my son's probably not going to come to me and open up with me or his mom very often, at least the way we would hope. There is no chance, this is 2 years ago, there's no chance that my son will pick up the phone to call my friends. No chance. Because he hardly knows them. He sees them. He understands their faces. He sees their Christmas cards. So I went home, called 3 friends and said, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Would you invest in my son's life? And they all say, sure. What do you mean? I say, so what I mean is 4 times a year, can we take you, me and my son and you, and we go to baseball game, Dave and Buster's, dinner, walk on the beach, camping, whatever it is, bike rides, paintballing, we'll pay for you and what I want. And I have great friends, so I didn't need to fill in the blank. But what I want from them is ask my son questions. More importantly, let my son listen in as me and my friend catch up and talk about life and talk about our work and talk about our marriages. And so what that's turned into, we've been doing this for the last couple of years. For instance, I've got a really good friend named Charlie who happens to be a marriage and family therapist. So it's even better.
Wow.
My son and I pick up Charlie to go to a Padres game and we have dinner beforehand. And Charlie's just beautiful in the way he interacts with my son. Tell me about elementary school. Who are your friends? What's cool to wear these days? What are the kids talking about? What's the music? And he's just asking a lot of questions, maybe 20 minutes. And that's about as deep as you can get with a 10, 11-year-old at that point. It turns back to Charlie and I just, we haven't seen each other in a while. Let's just talk. And my son a few times interrupts, but he's listening in for those next 3 or 4 hours as we watch a game together. And I know, because I did this too, he's listening to every word. It's just soaking in. There's 2 other guys too that I've been doing that with. And on the way home, every single time, I turn to my son with my friend Charlie there, with my friend John there, with my friend Caleb there. And I say, Cale, the reason we did this tonight is because in a few years, perhaps going to want to talk to me about stuff that really matters. I want you to call him. I want you to know that he's the kind of person that you should listen to, that you should ask questions to. You're going to have his phone number. You can call him for anything. And then, like, for instance, Charlie butts in and says, yeah, Cale, you can call me. You can talk to me about girls. You can tell me about how much you hate your dad. You can tell me anything. And one of these great conversations. And so it is the simplest thing to do that has so much depth and so much opportunity. Something that I wish my parents had done. I'm sure we all wish our parents had done. And some people get lucky to have a bunch of adults that care about them. Most kids don't have one, not even close to one. It's kind of like, what if we could do that? What if we could help structure these conversations and relationships and time spent with good, healthy people? That's something I think parents can do.
What a gift to be able to turn to our daughters and even our sons and say, hey, we have these friendships we've cultivated over these years of praying together.
Yeah.
They're so invested in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I mean, I don't know if that's a real intense thing that we've been praying for you 1 hour a week for your right. whole life, but I think there really are no better friendships. I mean, if we need to give right. moms a head start on listening,
yeah.
on starting these hard conversations, you may need yeah. to look no farther than your moms in prayer group.
That's right. Because what's the likelihood that if you make that ask, that another mom is going to say, of course? I mean, it's 100%. Really? And it's not even just like, sure, I'd be happy to do that if you need me to. It'd be like, I would be so honored to do that. Are you kidding me? I think time spent is great. But I also think, how do you structure those conversations to go better? And so one of the things we're trying to do as well is just give adults particularly and kids, talk about these things. Don't just sit for an hour and stare at each other in a Starbucks, you and a 12-year-old kid. It's not going, you know, what are you going to talk about? But so what do you talk about? And what kind of questions do you ask? How do you share stories? What we're really talking about here is mentoring. And what we don't mean by mentoring is sit down with kids and tell them stuff and lecture or give them a bunch of platitudes or even, frankly, Bible verses, because that becomes noise. But what I'm way more interested in parents doing and adults doing is, hey, would you mind if I told you the time about when I went to high school and it was really hard for me to make friends? Like, I was so lonely. Would you be cool if I share that with you? And the kid's gonna say, even if they're the most shut down defensive kid, sure. But like, it's gonna be, yeah. And then you tell them that really painful story, what it was like and how it finally worked out to make friends, and how you found that friend, it changed everything. And then that turns into, has that been hard for you too? Have you had a hard time finding friends? Oh, I'm so sorry. I know what that's like. It's such a different setup. And I think particularly in church world, in ministry world, we get mentoring wrong. We get mentoring as I'm going to tell you stuff to pray, tell you stuff to memorize, tell you stuff to focus on. And there's a time and a place for that, for sure. Call that camp, call that youth group.
Right.
But kids don't need more content or information. They need to be cared for, listened to. They need to hear how you've been processing that stuff. We want to make sure those conversations go well.
And you're pretty much assuming you're not going to be on that advisory board for your kid.
I think it's a good, safe assumption. And if I am, oh, that's awesome. And I think based on, at least for my kids, the relationships that we're setting up, I think I will be. I think mom will be. My wife will be. Let's plan on that not being true. At least the critical moments. Are my kids going to be shown things on the internet that's going to be overwhelming to them? Yep. Are they going to want to talk to mom and dad about it? Nope. Are they going to have said kids at school share things with them that just feels weird inside their minds and their hearts? Yeah. Are they going to want to tell us? No, because we'll overreact probably. What parent doesn't overreact? But would my friends overreact? No. I had a friend call me the other day and share with me the stuff that his teenage son is doing that he caught. And I'm sitting there listening to him. It's stuff, you know, like very typical teenage behavior. And he's sharing that. He goes, what do you think about that? And I kind of snapped out. I was like, well, as a dad, geez, I'm so sorry. It sounds really heavy. And then he goes, but what do you think from like a youth school perspective? And I was like, oh, I don't care. That stuff's not crazy at all. That's just normal. He's like, you don't think I should be freaking out? I'm like, no, you should certainly be concerned, certainly pray. No, your kid's not a bad kid. This is normal stuff. I could be pretty impartial when I hear another kid, but when my own kid, it's hard to read the imperceptible anxiety through my eyes and through my tone of voice. They'll read it, which will make them shut down. So I don't plan on being my kid's main mentor in a direct way, but I need to live my life in that way. I need to model it and demonstrate it for them.
I so needed recently somebody to look at me and go, that is not as big a deal as you're making it out to be as a parent. This is normal. To have somebody walk alongside you as a mom or a dad and say, no, typical behavior, because we feel a responsibility to help weed out the poor choices that they're making. So we can go ahead and assume that our kids are going to make some poor choices.
Right. Pretty safe. Because that's what adolescence is about.
Right. How do we help our kids come back from failure, like bad grades or a bad relationship? Really stupid choices well.
One of the things, because we work with so many schools and principals and counselors, there's certainly, I'd call it an epidemic. I don't know if that's the right term, but kids who don't handle failure well. And the story after story of kid who doesn't get a good grade on something or fails a test and just crumbles. Kid that doesn't make the varsity team and just is destroyed. That's the epidemic, but the symptom that's universal is parents that are calling principal. It's parents that are calling the coach. It's parents that are coming to the teacher to say, hey, how dare you didn't give him enough time to finish this assignment. It's the rescuing effect, which I understand as a parent. How many times has one of my kids forgotten their notebook on the way to school and I'm just wanting to run back home to get it for them, or forgot their glove at practice? And it's just, oh gosh, I don't want them to be embarrassed, which is really about me. It's just a long thing. So it's an oversimplified answer, but my opinion is parents, we need to let our kids fail a lot more. So I'll tell you a quick story. My son, we've told him, he has a teacher this year that requires everything that's sent home that's graded needs to be signed by a parent. We've had the conversation 49 times of, if you have something to sign, we do it at night before bed. We do not do it in the morning. And I'm the signature guy. It was a few weeks ago and it's the morning time. School's about to start and I'm trying to hop in the shower. And my son comes up and says, hey daddy, I forgot to get the sign. I need to get it signed. And so I put my finger out and I say, no, I don't sign things in the morning. And he says, he starts freaking out. And he says, you have to, or I'm not going to have recess. I'm going to be benched all week, which is the consequence for not doing this. And I said, how many times have I told you that we do not sign things in the morning? And I know without a shadow of a doubt that you didn't forget that whatever I see in that paper is going to be a bad grade. He hands it to me and it's his math test. And I think he got like a 60% on a math test. In his world, it's purely effort. He could get 100% for math. He's very smart. It's effort for him. It's not showing the work. It's not caring. And so I just kind of laugh like, oh, yes, surprise, surprise. So I get in the shower, and here's the classic moment. He's now screaming at me. This is your fault. You know, I'm going to be benched, and you're ruining my week. And he's leaving the house, slamming the door, and I scream out to him, "You'd better fail now so you don't fail when you have a job. You're going to learn this lesson today when it actually doesn't matter, because we can't do this when you're in high school. We can't do this when you're in college. We cannot do this when you're working." And I think for parents, we have to let our kids fail. We have to let the discomfort and the pain come now to learn natural consequences. And I understand the consequences feel dire. What if they don't get into Stanford because they didn't get it? They failed biology, AP bio. I get it. It's real consequences, but life is more important down the road. So now is the time to figure out how to deal with failure and become resilient, and that we could hold that tension with them. We can help them feel things. We don't need to shame them or blame them. Just be like, yeah, this really, really, really sucks.
I love the dad that you are and the intentionality that you show. And I imagine that there's some moms listening going, gee, I wish I had a like-minded partner here. Mm. Mm-hmm. We're celebrating Father's Day, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you observed in your work a difference between students who have had a dad and who is involved versus dads who are checked out and absent? And then I just want to quickly say, we're going to offer hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to offer hope.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. Is there a difference between people who have dads involved and not?
I don't know what percentage have involved dads, but it's not many. And what I see is the kids who have involved dads, when I get to know about their family and their story, which is the questions that we ask, the students that can confidently share their thoughts and opinions, they're the shining students, quite frankly. They're the ones who, as an adult, I like that kid. I want to be around that kid. They're confident and they're cool and they're unique and they're quirky. And I hear about their parents because those are the questions we ask, and dad's really involved. But that is, in a class of 30 kids, that's a couple. Hmm. And I think the vast majority, and your listeners know this, don't have involved dads. And that could be a whole nother series of conversations. And I'm not an expert on that. I'm a little league dad. I'm a softball coach. I hang out at my kids' school every day. So I'm aware of how few dads are involved. And the ones that are, I'd say half of them are too involved. It's the classic little league coach who is there every day. You know, it's the dad that this is all about them. They're still a kid and they're screaming at their kid. And so that's an involved dad, but it's like, to what degree, to what end? There's not enough of dads who are involved, unfortunately.
I know that breaks your heart. How do we get involved in those kids' lives who don't have dads present?
Right.
How do we be or form an advisory board for them?
Yeah, I've coached the same group of boys for baseball for 4 seasons. And then in Little League, there's always a draft, so I didn't have to. And quite frankly, our team sucked. We lost every year. And every year, I'd get back to that draft room with a bunch of other dads and see this list of names. And I would I'd think, okay, I hear this voice in my head, like, this is the year where we need to start picking some all-star players and make it equitable across the league. But I'd see these boys who, some of them don't have dads around. Give me that kid. Give me that kid. Team's going to suck again. But for the sake of me and a couple of other assistant coaches that see the world the same way, we have this what if that kid continues to be picked by dads like us over the course of a few years? What could happen? And there's no savior complex at all, because that's going to be messy and hard for that kid no matter what. But what if we keep picking that kid? And the way we coach is, how's school going? How's life? What are you listening to? What are you watching? And I know I'm going to see that kid for the next 10 years at high school football games. And I'm always going to be coach. No question. Yeah. I'm always going to be that kid's coach. And so absolutely, it breaks my heart. And I think we can model that. Those dads who... maybe the moms share this with the dads this episode. What are you going to do about it? Because you're a key part of that math for any kid that you know, any kid that's involved in your kids' lives. You're part of the math. You're part of the five. And so there's no plan B. It's you.
And one of those core questions that you're asking, even when it's in a secular environment, is, what do you believe?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's helping them drill down on, I think this is what my coach believes.
Yeah.
And you probably get to be a part of those faith conversations somewhere along the way.
Absolutely.
So how can we, as moms and wives, come alongside our husbands or our children's dads if we're divorced as a parent? What's a practical way that we could come alongside you?
Yeah, I think part of it is compassion. I think men and dads deal with a lot. There's a reason there's patterns. There's a reason there's pain. There's a reason dads get shut down. So part of it's compassion, but I'm not that interested in compassion. I'm a little bit more interested in high expectations. And so I think a part of it is clarifying what your kids need. And it's not blanket statements like, they need you around more. They need you to show up more. That's helpful. But what does that mean? So my recommendation to be real practical is get very specific about what that means. They need you to show up these days and do these things. We need, when you're home, to put down your phone or your laptop at least for 15 minutes and ask questions to your kids. We need you to tuck them in, even if they're in high school, and sit for 5 minutes and talk about their day. Like, just to, like, the more specific the possible, do not assume that we dads know what we're supposed to do. Because if we did, we'd probably do it. We weren't modeled that. We don't know who has another role model as a dad. We just don't know. So help us figure that out. And don't be ashamed of demanding things, but don't demand cliches. Don't just be as helpful as possible. I don't know if that's helpful, but I think that's what I've needed.
What do you want us praying for as a father?
As a father? Oh, geez. I think for the moms to pray for the dads, to pray for your husbands, pray for the dad figures, that we would deal with our stuff, deal with our own wounds, daddy issues, that we would have the courage to face that, to get the help that we need, get the friends that we need. Pray that we find friends. You know, one of the questions we ask kids is, tell us about the friendships your parents have. Every single group of kids, hands are raised that who would say, yeah, I don't think my dad has any friends. So pray that pray that the dads have friends, good men of character that ask questions and don't just watch football, but want to have deep conversations with. Pray that we have the courage to overcome the barriers. And pray that our hearts, you know, I love that sense of scripture, that the hearts of fathers turn to the children. That's not cliche. That's real. But it doesn't mean dads don't care about kids. I think it more means there's stuff in the way and we don't exactly know what to do.
So what hope do you have for moms who don't have men in their home, dads who are totally absent from the picture? I mean, you have to have seen kids who come out of hard environments be successful in faith and in life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one, it's do not assume that the role that you play isn't covering up a multitude of things, multitude of sins. Strong moms are so powerful for kids' lives. Boys, I'm thinking of boys. I keep kind of going in my head towards boys that don't have dads around. Strong. I had a very strong mom who's done a lot for me to grow up, to be courageous and kind and strong. So that's where my primary hope is. But also be on the lookout for God to send men that will respond to that call. And you might not even see it. It might be a coach, a teacher, a security guard, a principal. Even if your kid's getting in trouble, the principals that I've learned to know and become friends with, they might have to have the role of being the tough disciplinarian, but they're doing it out of such kind love. There's a principal in town who's a principal of a continuation high school so that's the school where a lot of tough kids are going. Kids with drug issues and homelessness issues and abuse issues, just a rough ragtag group of kids. But the way that this guy is being a principal to them, he's teaching them, he's being a father figure. And he says that behind closed doors. I'm gonna tell you what a man would do in this situation. I'm gonna ask you to rise up into that. And so there are men around. Be on the lookout for those guys and encourage your kids to be in a relationship with them or help manufacture some more interaction with them.
Scott, what scriptures are you praying for your kids right now?
The one is it's Ephesians 3:14. I don't have it memorized, but it's for this reason I kneel before the Father. And what I get from that for me, and as I pray for my kids, is that the relationship they would learn to have with the Father, that the immeasurable riches of glory that God has capacity to give, that they will learn to sit and kneel before the Father. So my son going to middle school, what does he do in the middle of the day when he's got no one to stand near during passing period? What happens when the friend he thought was a friend that isn't a friend and is making fun of him at lunch? where does he turn to? How does he handle that? And it's the prayer is that my kids would learn to internally in their hearts, in real life, turn their hearts towards God and receive from God in a real tangible way, something that matters in that moment and through that season. And so that's what I'm praying for me. And that's certainly what I'm praying for my kids as they are out in the world in middle school and public school and sports, that they would directionally turn their hearts to him. And that's it.
What's shaping your prayer life right now?
You know, there's a book that I've read recently or still reading, and it's called The Awakened Family. And I don't know how to pronounce the woman's name who wrote it. Shefali Saberi, starts with a T.
We'll get that into the show notes. They can figure out how to spell that.
Yes. So the warning for a very Christian audience is that she's not a Christian. I think her background is Hindu or Buddhist. I'm not sure which. But what she talks about in this book is that, and it's, so I read it through the lens of theology, Christian theology, and it's like screaming to me, where she talks about how your kids have been given to you as a mirror for you. Your kids have been given to you for you to become whole and healthy. Your kids like were uniquely designed for you to grow up. And that's a shift, because I think most of the time in parenting conversations, we're talking about how do we shape our kids? How do we parent them? How do we discipline them? And this is a reverse. This is your kids are about you. And so what's shaping my prayer life is like, holy cow, every interaction that I have with my kids, for better and for worse, is an opportunity for me to go internal, to allow the Holy Spirit to guide where I still need some fixing and healing and growing up to do. And so I've really loved, it's one of those books that I just sit on a sentence and highlight it and have to put it down for a few days, because I just need to let that soak in. It's a paradigm shift for me. It's the biggest paradigm shift I've had since being a parent, as I read this book and process it, because I know it's so good and so true. Even as a softball coach for my daughter's last season, I'm not through that lens now. It's about me. It's about, if my daughter goes and strikes out, all of a sudden I'm realizing, gosh, that's about me. I feel embarrassed. I thought I could coach her better. I'm sure people are whispering, that's the coach's daughter. She can't even hit. Like, that's all about me. And that's all opportunity for me to pray and allow God to minister to me. And it's also about her too, for sure. But I'm just seeing, man, that God's got a lot that he's doing.
That's if so I'm good. Just paying Our attention. Kids really are, or at least it feels like they are, these little reflections of us out there. And boy, when I see a flaw in them, the truth is that I feel that in a way that is not necessarily probably the way that the Lord wants that to reflect on me. Oh, so good. Yeah. So good. Well, Scott, thanks for having us here and for your time and wisdom.
Oh, thank you. It's a great conversation.
Do you think you could pray us out of here?
Absolutely. Thank you. So, Father in heaven, we come before you and pray that you would be for all the fathers, dad figures, that you would be doing something internally in them, prompting them, making them feel more comfortable in this moment, encouraging them, showing them that there is more work that you want to do inside of them. Whether they understand who you are or not, Lord, that you, by the power of your Spirit, would be shifting things inside them. And they would sense that something is happening that's changing. Would you even bring to mind the ways that they've failed and the shame that they feel or embarrassment that they feel for not showing up in the ways they know that they should? Would you bring that up? Would you turn up the volume and noise of that and the temperature of that so that their hearts would turn towards helplessness and humility and openness to receive something different? I pray that you'd help them come to the end of themselves and realize that they're there so that they might turn to you and hear your voice internally inside them, hear you calling. And I pray for the moms. Lord, thank you for them. Bless them. Empower them. Strengthen them. And the work that they're doing to raise up healthy kids, that you see it and that you find it beautiful and that they are more than enough. Even if there aren't fathers or dads in the picture, that what they're doing is compensating in tremendous, miraculous ways. And so I pray that you would encourage them. And also, Lord, that you would help them to become more specific with those husbands or ex-husbands or dads. Help them become even more specific about the kinds of behaviors and attitudes and experiences that their kids need to have and get from the dads. And so help them? Would you embolden them in that? Would you strengthen them, clarify for them, help them deal with their own sense of loss and sadness so that they can more confidently declare and ask and demand for things that are right and good for their own kids? So for Father's Day, Lord, which can be a wonderful day and a painful day, would you do something new? Would you do something new in this season that you would turn the hearts of fathers to their children? We pray this and ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. I'm so glad there are guys like Scott Schimmel in our world today, helping our kids navigate transition and helping us as parents ask really good questions. I know you're going to want to connect with him off the podcast, and you can do that at www.theuschool.com. That's Y-O-U-U. At Moms in Prayer International, we hope that you had a terrific Father's Day weekend celebrating the men in your life that you love. You can bet I'll be grabbing my husband, Mike, and asking him to sit down and listen to this podcast with me, because we've got some thinking to do about the advisory board. I wonder if you need to be praying about that too. How can we be available to be on the advisory board of kids who need it most? You can get today's show notes on the Moms in Prayer blog at momsinprayer.org. And we'd love to connect with you outside the podcast on all of our social media platforms. Your daily prayers are making a difference in this world. Moms make the difference. Moms just like you. See you next week.